0611 Real 2.
Mr. Campbell, Real 2. We're talking about your time at the Guards Depot training, doing the at Caterham from August 1943. Sort of running through the types of training you did. Any other weapons training? Would you a hand grenade? I was thinking you might have done.
We had hand grenades there, where you had to lie on the ground. They had a wooden contraption similar to rugby posts, and you had to throw the grenade over the bar without raising yourself off the ground too much, which was quite a feat because the bar was quite high up at that time.
And did they teach you the sort of fusing, you know, the other parts of you know, using a grenade?
No, all you did is you held the grenade, you pulled the pin out with your left hand, and then through it and put your head down in case of the blast.
What about were you introduced to the Sten, any of the light machine guns, submachine guns, right?
We had training with the Bren gun.
Alright, the Bren, tell us about that.
The Bren gun. Well, we had to dismantle the Bren gun, build it up again, blindfolded, which meant that when you dismantled it, you put it into a special order on the ground, so that when you're blindfolded, you knew what went first back onto the gun itself to get it built up again. You had to do that blindfolded. That, the reason was, of course, that if you were firing it in the dark, that you knew just what you were doing.
What about actually firing on the range?
On the range, we had Tommy guns, which, unfortunately for me, the Tommy gun was going all over the place. I couldn't get used to a Tommy gun. The Bren gun, yes. A rifle, yes. But the Tommy gun, it spluttered.
But you didn't use a Sten?
No.
At that time? Anyway.
At that time, no. No.
Any other weapons training? Light mortars or,
heavy machine guns? No, not really.
What about sort of tactical training, you know, advancing, digging in, that sort of thing?
Well, we had to dig trenches, and what we had to do is, after you dug the trench, you had to cover the loose earth with branches of trees, etc., and also remember to cover the bottom part of your trench with branches, so that if any planes, German planes, came across, they wouldn't see the new earth and know straight away that there was a trench and things like that.
What about advancing? You know, that sort of formations you'd use, advancing in rushes, section?
Not really. At Caterham, it was mostly all basic training.
Any other parts of basic training you remember?
Not really, just the trenches. We got an awful lot of assault course.
Tell us about that.
An awful lot of the assault course.
What was the assault course like?
Pretty awful at times, especially in the winter. We had a cliff, a hill with a cliff on it, and you had to jump off this cliff with your bayonet, your rifle and bayonet held up, and you dropped roughly about 6-7 feet onto a slope which was covered in sand, and then run down there and jumped into the trench. You also had planks of wood which were built up about 12 feet from the ground, and you had to walk along these planks of wood, and then there was a gap of about 3 feet onto another plank of wood. You had to jump across that onto another plank of wood, which could be very, very dangerous in the winter time because it was iced up and it was quite slippy. We went from Caterham.
Hang on a minute. What about the food there? Because that would be your first experience of army food. What did you think of the food you got?
Breakfast was all right.
What might you get?
There was no choice. Well, you had the bacon and eggs, porridge, tea, and that was your basics. There was no choice. You either took it or you left it. There was no choice. Quite different to further on in the story when I come to when we were billeted in an RAF room.
And what about lunch or dinner or whatever you call it, tea?
Lunch was usually meat, potatoes, a stew sometimes they're made up, and that was about all.
Was there enough? I mean, did you have enough?
Well, really? There was enough food, oh yes, there was enough food.
Was it good ingredients, well cooked? Or?
Yes, it was well cooked, uh-huh.
So the problem was the lack of variety for you?
The lack of variety, very little.
And how did you get on with your fellow recruits?
All right.
What sort of lads were they?
They were a mixture. Some English lads were there, some Scots lads. It was a proper mixture of the boys, and you all made your own friends that you always stuck together.
Did the Scottish stick together and the English, or did you mix?
No, we mixed. One of my best friends was a fellow from Luton, John Culbertson, whom I haven't seen since the war days, but I've often thought whether he's still in the land of the living or not. But he was a good friend to John. John was a good friend to me. He came from another lad, was a Glasgow lad, who eventually left the army and became a minister in Glasgow. A couple of boys that I knew, they came from Fife. We all went around together.
Was there any bullying?
Well, there was one boy in particular. He came from the Gorbals in Glasgow. And he used to think he was a bit of a tough boy because Gorbals had a very bad reputation at that time. And one day, we used to have what they called a shining parade, where you sat polishing all your equipment for an hour. You were not allowed to speak. However, my bed was right next to the door, and one of my friends, John, was in the bed opposite me. We're sitting polishing, and then walked the company sergeant major. He spoke to me. I just forget what he said now, conversation, just general. And they walked up the room, walked out, and all I heard was, yes, these Edinburgh, la la la, crawling the sergeant major. So I turned round and I said, are you speaking about me? Because I was the only Edinburgh boy in the squad. Yes, was the reply. And I said, well, I said, just button your lip. He walked up to me and he went to strike me. But before he could do that, I upended him over the bed. Of course, all the boys started to shout. In rushes the sergeant major, calling both of us. But Johnny, when the sergeant major asked what had happened, Johnny told them. He called Dave in Edinburgh. He said, right, you're on a charge because you're not allowed to swear in the army, you see. Which is different these days as far as I can make out. But at that time you weren't allowed to swear. So he was put on a charge. And that boy never spoke to me again and never came near me.
How did you get on with the instructor? Sorry.
That was one incident, but in general, everybody got on with everybody else.
How did you get all the instructors, the sergeants?
Very well. The one actually that he gave us unarmed combat. When the first day we walked into the gym, I looked at him and I thought, I know you. And then it clicked. He used to be a wrestler in the El Dorado in Edinburgh. It was me being in the police. Part of my job was to go to the El Dorado in case there was any trouble. However, he was teaching how to attack a sentry. So I'm looking all round about the gym, and I heard them say, you, we'll take you as an example. And he pointed his finger right at me. However, he took me out, and he was teaching how to get the German, pull his helmet back, and stick the knife into his throat. He said, he put his arm round me, and he's talking to the boys, slow motion. He said, you just get him like this. He says, and he went to pull me back, but I threw him, because I'd been taught how to do that. Because I used to go into the gym and do unarmed combat with the police. So he looked at me, lying on the floor, and he says, who taught you that? I said, oh, I used to be in the Edinburgh police. And I said, I used to do it in the gym. Oh. He said, is that the only place you've been? I said, no. I said, I used to watch you in the El Dorado back home in Edinburgh. Oh, I said, you did? I said, yes. I said, I knew your face whenever I walked in. So I bent down to give him a hand up. The next second, I was lying on my back beside him. He said to me, that's all right. He says, you take one half of the squad. He says, and I'll take the other half. There's me, a raw recruit, teaching half a squad how to do an armed combat. And he had the other half, and I got on well with him. Even Sergeant Bell, who was a sergeant there, I got on well with him.
What were they like as instructors? Most of them, I don't mean your own armed combat, I mean the others.
Most of them were very good. They were very, very good. They didn't push you to the limit. If you couldn't do it, just, oh, all right then, just carry on and do what you can. They really were good.
And they didn't swear?
Pardon?
They didn't swear at you?
No. 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 You just weren't allowed to swear. You were called all the so-and-so's under the sun, but they never used swore words. You're a big pansy and things like that. You know, you can't take it, and big softy, you're mammy's boy. Things like that. They ridiculed you, more or less, until you used to lose the head and I'm going to do it. But that's how all it was.
Did they know their stuff?
Yep. Oh, yes. A lot of them did. Although there was one sergeant who used to give us a drill, bayonet drill, and you don't do that, we do it this way. It wasn't until later on, after I was abroad and the war had finished, that he was drafted to us. He had never been abroad in his life, he'd never seen any fighting. So in actual fact, he had told us a pack of lies.
Did you see much of your officers, or was it mainly the NCOs you saw? At this stage?
Just during a parade, you saw the officers. Sometimes the officer came round, the officer of the watch came round at night time, but very rarely, very rarely.
And what about recreations when you weren't training? I mean, how would you spend your time?
Mostly in the Naffy.
What was the Naffy canteen like? Can you describe it for us?
Well, rock buns, to be the main ingredient there, rock buns and tea and coffee. Things like that.
It was the wet, and they didn't have beer, because some of them had beer.
Some of them had beer,
but not this one.
Not this one, no.
And were there any games or darts or billiards? It would be.
There was the darts there. There was darts there, and the some of the boys used to play called bingo now, but it wasn't called bingo.
Housey.
Lotto. What they call lotto. They used to play that there. But apart from that, there's really nothing. You used to get a pass to go out to the pitch houses and that. And it wasn't until we were transferred to Pirbright, where they had a picture house in the camp.
How long had you been there before you were transferred to Pirbright? You got there in August.
Yeah. Roughly about 7 weeks training we did there. And then we went on
so
to...
So, probably September.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where did you go in September? That was your basic training.
That's the basic training.
What happened? Where next then?
You're moved to Pirbright.
Another guards
now. As a trained soldier, yes. Uh-huh.
And this was just a guard. You hadn't joined a particular guards regiment at the time?
No.
And what happened at, when you got to Pirbright?
Well, you just continued your training on the route marches. Your last route march was about 40 miles, where you ran 100 yards, walked 100 yards, ran 100 yards, walked 100 yards. And then as you came back, you went over the assault course and down to Bisley, and they fired at the targets in Bisley.
That sounds pretty tough.
It was to toughen you up. Mm-hmm. It was to toughen you up. It was a killer, actually. It really was a killer. But we survived.
Any other trials? It just to carry on, really, what had gone before.
Yes, that was all.
And how long were you at Pirbright? You hadn't learned to drive or anything there.
This is when I was taught to drive at Pirbright.
At Pirbright. Tell us about that then, because we're interested in that. Could you drive before you joined the army?
No. When we got to Pirbright, we did the basic training and that. We were fully qualified soldier, trained soldier, and I got friendly with one of the old guardsmen, and I said to him, I wish I could get into the transport because I could drive.
But why did you want to drive?
Well, I just fancied driving and I wanted to learn to drive. So anyway, he said to me, well, the only way you're going to get in, he says, and take a tip from me, he says, is to try and get a batman's job, last for so long, and then tell the officer that the job's not suited to you, you'd like to go into the transport section. He said, have you got any preference? I says, well, I'd love to go into a tank. He says, well, he says, ask him. I says, well, they've all got batsmen. He says, well, he says, the first time, he says, they get the new officers coming from Sandhurst. He says, apply for a batman's job. So, however, we waited, and there was a new batch of officers came, and I applied for a job. I got it.
Yeah, what were your duties as batman? We'll do that first. Mm-hmm. What did you have to do as a servant?
Well, you just looked after the officer's uniform.
Just one officer?
One officer. Looked after his uniform. You were excused all duties. You didn't do any guard duty or nothing. You excused all duties. You just looked after the officer, kept his Sam Brown belt polished, his webbing all polished, his badges all polished, his uniform pressed. You were just a servant to that officer. This lasted for 3 months.
How did he treat you?
Very well. Very well.
Would they tip you, you know, a couple of bob or whatever?
Oh, no. No, you didn't get anything like that, no. You thought you were well off being excused all duties, all guard duties, that was enough. Then, as I said, about 3 months, and then I went to him and asked if I could speak to him. He said, yes, what is it? I said, well, I don't think this job's really what I thought it was. I says, I'd really like to go into the tanks or the transport. However, he said, he says, I'll be sorry to lose you. He said, you've been very good. He says, you've kept my uniform right up to standard. He said, are you sure you want to leave? I said, yes. I says, I don't think I'm suited to this job. I says, I want to get more action, be more active. I said, because during the day I've got nothing to do. You were sitting in the barracks room with nothing to do. And nobody could tell you to go on duty or do anything. just a case of wasted day. So he says, well, I'll see what I can do for you. So that same afternoon, he came and he said, you wanted to go into the tanks? I said, yes. He says, right. He says, as from the beginning of next week, he said, just pick up your kit, he says, and go across. So I went across to the MT place, and that was me. Following week, I started off there.
Now, how did they teach you to drive? Take us through the process.
Well, you actually had to go to a school where they taught you all the different aspects of a tank, first of all. The driving part, they took you out on what they called a PU. It was a sergeant at the time, showed me where the gears were, steering column, brake, clutch, etc., etc. Drove for about 5 or 10 minutes, and then put me in the driving seat and told me what to do. From the PU, once you...
Now, you've got a story about that early... Was that the early days of the PU?
That's just it was a small, just a small van. That was the early days. Once I was taught to drive, you went on to a 1500 weight. 1500 weight, all right. It was the same sergeant. There was one of the lads sitting in the back of the 1500 weight. And this sergeant took me out into the country. And he says, now, he says, I want to teach you an emergency stop. Right, he says, speed up. I was doing 30, speed up. So I went to 35. No, speed up. I said, but I'm doing 35. Doesn't matter, he says, it's all right, speed up. He got me up to 45, between 45 and 50. And he says, now, he says, when I slap my hand, he says, I want you to brake. When he slapped his hand, I put the brake on, foot brake on. The 1500 weight went sideways up the road, and I heard someone shouting at the back. Here it was the lad. He had let go. He'd been thrown about the back of the 1500 weight. However, I managed to keep it under control, and the sergeant was quite happy with my emergency brake. So we went back, and from then on, they put me on a 3-tonner. Truck. You did that, but to pass your test, I went back on to the 1500 weight. They took me to Reading. We parked the 1500 weights outside the station. When my turn came, it was an officer came into the truck with me. Drive off. I drove off through Reading, through the main streets in Reading, came to the traffic lights that were at stop, pulled up. The officer told me to bring the truck back a bit. As I reversed, I heard this yell. I put on the brakes, turned round, and there was a horse's head stuck in the back of the truck. However, nothing was said. Drove forward through the lights. Got back to where we had started from. The officer jumped out, told me to reverse. He's standing in front of the truck, waving me back, and I heard a crash. Stopped the truck, got out and looked. There was a motorbike on its side. I had backed into it. It belonged to the officer. However, he admitted it was his fault. He should never have parked his bike there, and I passed with flying colours, much to my relief. I was now a qualified driver.
Were you taught maintenance as well, and simple...
Just simple maintenance, not a lot, just simple maintenance.
What sort of thing?
Well, just the how to clean plugs, sparking plugs, how to keep the radiator filled with water, and the oil... The engine with oil, just basics like that. Nothing too mechanical about it.
Now,
We had the remis for that. They used to come in.
Now, what was the next stage of learning to drive? You know, in this, because you.
Well, from then on, we went into a Churchill.
Now, where was this at?
That was at Pirbright.
Still at Pirbright.
Still
right.
At Pirbright.
Now, tell me, how did they teach you to drive the Churchill? Because that's completely different, isn't it?
Well, you went out in the tanks. First of all, you were on a training ground. If I mind right, I think it was Chobham Common. I think that's what you called it down there. And that was a training ground. You went into the Churchill, which had what they called a tow bar, not a steering wheel. It was a bar, horizontal bar, with two handles at either side. There was the gear lever down on the floor on the right-hand side. It was what they termed a gate change.
What did that mean?
It was a metal box with slits on it with 1, 2, 3, 4 changes on it, which you had to push in to these slots depending upon what gear you wanted to go into. It was a case of kicking your clutch down, letting your tiller bar go, getting both hands on your gear lever and putting it into gear. My first attempt wasn't very successful until the sergeant shouts, "Kick the bloody thing, the clutch won't break." So I kicked and the gear lever just slid right back and forward and back and forward. Much to my and the sergeant's amazement, I had broken one of the changing forks in the tank. He wasn't too happy, as we had to wait for hours on the Rimi people coming out to repair the tank, and it was in the early hours of the morning before we got back to camp. That was one case. Another case, we were sliding all over the place with the ice, and the tank in front of us slid into a ditch. We tried to put a hawser on the tank, but unsuccessful, because our tank started to slide as well. So we just stopped and sent for the Remy again. On one of the occasions, out training in the roads this time, you are guided by the officer or the sergeant who is standing outside the turret, and he's speaking to you through a microphone.
You mean standing through the turret? Yeah.
He's standing out through the turret, and he's guiding you through the intercom. I happened to be driving that day, and he told me there was another two tanks in front of me, and he told me it was an arrow road to pull in to the side. Well, when you're driving, all you can see is straight ahead of you. You can't see to either right or left because of the tracks. They're further out than what you are. And as I went into the side, I heard something hammering on the tank. So I took off my earphones, opened the hatch and looked out. There was an old man with his walking stick. His two steps into his house, there was no pavement, were on the road, and the tank had gone across the front step and crushed it. There was no step left. He was shouting he was going to report us to the War Office for damages and claim damages. Told us to reverse. I got down again, reversed. What we didn't know was that the mud wing off the near side track was caught onto his wooden picket fence, which pulled the fence down. Boy, was I in trouble. However, once out of sight of the old man, we all started to laugh about it.